This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Joyful!
Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. This is the show where we talk about spirituality and sexuality for our community.
Good evening, faithful listeners. You're listening to the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 every Thursday from 8 till 9. And I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Nivi Balachandran.
Hi, Tal. Really excited for tonight. We're going to be speaking to Rabbi Kim Ettlinger about a Midsummer Shabbat service. But first, Tal, you wanted to introduce a new segment to the Spirit Lounge.
So that's right. It's called Holy Day of the Week. And we'll start each show by sort of learning a little about a interesting event, religious holiday that's coming up. That way we can actually consider them and talk about them before they happen instead of when you read them in the news after they happen. And we'll be looking at all sorts of things with all the different world religions.
And to kick things off, this week we are talking about Christian Unity Week.
Right. So what have you seen with that? I sort of understood a bit that it's sort of, you know, we're not really starting with a day, we're starting with a whole week.
Absolutely, and it's not, obviously, as the name would suggest, it's not like a religious holiday. It's really about Christians reminding themselves of Jesus's prayer for his disciples that, quote, they may be one so that the world may believe, which is from John 17:21.
So you could sort of say it's like an intra-faith event, right?
Absolutely, because as we know, Christian denominations vary far and wide in their practice, and this is about Christians coming together, different congregations and churches, looking to exchange preachers, arrange special ecumenical celebrations and prayer services to remember their oneness.
So let's maybe talk to our guest now. I mean, I think it's a great one. I really hope that we can keep opening by learning about all sorts of different faiths. So let's talk to Rabbi Kim Ettlinger. She was born in Johannesburg, South Africa. She moved with her family to Perth, Western Australia in 1988. And while in Perth, she was an active member of Temple David, sort of a local synagogue there. At first, she was studying rabbinics in London and then later in California. And she was finally ordained at Hebrew Union College in May 2005. She earned two Masters of Arts degrees in Jewish education and in Hebrew letters. So now she's one of the rabbis at Temple Beth Israel. We've spoken to quite a few people there from there before. And so welcome to Kim.
Thank you, Tal. It's wonderful to be here. Thank you so much.
So, Kim, when did you realize you wanted to become a rabbi?
Well, I think it was a one particular moment in my life. I was growing up in Perth. I was very involved in my local synagogue, as you mentioned, Temple David. Do a shout out to all my friends out there. And one of the things that happened is through that involvement, a friend of the family came to me and said, "Hey, Kim, you're so involved. Why don't you become a rabbi?" And I thought, holy moly, what a cool thing. I'm going to do that.
And that was it?
That was pretty much it, because I had no idea that women could even be rabbis, that it was even a possibility, and I was going to go out and be the first. Little did I know that there'd been many women before me.
So what does it take to become a rabbi?
Well, I think you've got to have the right sensibility, a right heart and mind. On the practical level, it means that you have to have a degree of some sort. You have to prove that you are capable of higher education, university education. Then you apply to an accredited rabbinic school. As you had mentioned, I applied to Hebrew Union College, and I was ordained there. In Hebrew, we say getzmicha. And you know, you study there for 5 years. The 1 year I had was in Jerusalem, and then 4 years in Los Angeles. But I also went to another school before that, which was the Leo Beck College in London.
Right, and so could you not transfer between them, or Is it normally that people would do 5 years and you still did that? Or
well, I did a little bit more than 5 years because okay. I did go to the London school first and I felt that that perhaps wasn't the right fit for me. I feel that I was much more aligned with Reformed Judaism in the United States. Not that there's a huge difference, but there are some differences.
I mean, 5 years is quite a long time. So what sort of, I mean, what, how come it takes so, such a long time to do?
There's a lot to learn. We cover lots of topics, as you can imagine. It's not just theology, but we do history, philosophy. We learn Hebrew. We study Talmud and Midrash, all of the different holy Jewish texts.
Wow. And do you end up doing, I mean, let's say someone's to become more in the area of taking care of people in hospital, what's that called? Like pastoral care?
Stuff
like, are those extras or is that all part of the system or is it included? I don't know.
In a way it's included, yes, because we also have the opportunity to take a couple of courses that focus on pastoral care. As you can imagine, for a rabbi or for a minister of religion, being involved in hospitals and helping people get through difficult times, also happy times, takes a certain level of understanding and empathy. Some of that you can learn. You can learn the basics, the rubrics of what to do when you enter into a hospital room or counsel a family through a bereavement, for example. And I think it's just one of those things that you learn along the way. But really, when you learn most, it's when you're working with families when you are a rabbi.
I can also see that at some point you were a rabbinical student in Las Vegas at some point. So, I mean, I guess for most people, Las Vegas doesn't strike them as the as a home of sort of Jewish learning and study. So what was the experience like there?
Well, as a student rabbi, you have the opportunity to work for many different congregations. And you're there is essentially as an intern. And the one experience that I had was spending a year and I'd commute from Los Angeles flying to Las Vegas and it sounded all very sexy and very exciting. And working with one of the largest congregations there happened to be named in Hebrew Ner Tamid, which means eternal light, which I think is quite fitting for Las Vegas. And, you know, it was just basically it's a regular congregation. There's nothing special. I think some of the people who are members there, they work in the casinos, of course. You saw people wearing croupier outfits if they were coming to synagogue after work or on their way to work. But most of the people that were there in the congregation were in other kinds of industries, whether it was the medical or law, or maybe they had private businesses. Not everybody was in the gambling business.
What? There's things in Las Vegas outside of the Strip?
There absolutely are.
Apparently there are synagogues there.
Well, funnily enough, Las Vegas is actually quite a popular family destination, and that's something I was totally shocked to hear. I mean, besides, you know, the hangover styled antics, that it's actually a popular family destination because of like the M&M factory and a few other little things like that.
Yeah, from what I understand, it seems to go up and down. You know, mm-hmm. they tend to focus because they wanted to bring families. You've got amazing hotels like MGM Hotel or Treasure Island Hotel, mm-hmm. which do have a strong children's theme, but not all of them.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Yeah, well, I've actually been to Las Vegas as well, and certainly I actually went there when I was still in high school with my family, so and my siblings were much younger than me. So definitely.
And you know the slogan is, whatever happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, yeah, so you can't really talk about it.
I know, but it's a bit different because, you know, when you're talking about that, you went and saw magic shows. Though I must say, that show at Treasure Island, I'm not so sure that is for children, quite frankly. So why don't you tell, you've brought in all of the songs for us today.
I certainly have, yes.
They're very interesting. So maybe you could tell us about our first one. It's by Peter, Paul and Mary. It wouldn't strike you necessarily as a particularly Jewish song. So well, why have you brought this one in?
Well, the Peter is obviously Peter Yara. For me, that song really speaks about social justice. You know, ringing out the bells of liberty and those kinds of things. And progressive Judaism, as you know, being a progressive Jew, it has its roots firmly based in social justice, in the prophets. And the prophets really spoke out against the injustices of the world. And this is a song, to me, that represents that. And we often play that when we have a Seder, Passover the Passover meal at the synagogue. This has entered into our repertoire, if you will.
So this is If I Had a Hammer by Peter, Paul and Mary. Good evening. You're listening to The Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. And we're here talking to Rabbi Kim Ettlinger from Temple Beth Israel.
Orthodox Judaism separates or restricts customs according to gender, is my very, very basic understanding. So how would that differ to Progressive Judaism?
Well, in Progressive Judaism, we believe in full equality between the sexes. So anything that a man can do, a woman can do.
Wonderful.
If not better. No. And I think that that really represents who we are in many ways. For example, when it comes to sitting in synagogue in an Orthodox congregation, men and women are segregated. They sit separately. When it comes to participation in religious life, Orthodox Judaism sees women as having a different role, more of nurturing and being in the home, and Progressive Judaism sees that role equally shared by both men and women. And so that's really something that we hold on to and hold really part of our hearts and our theology and our mindset, the way that we interpret our texts. And we also notice that when we do study Jewish texts, that they're really is in Jewish texts a sense of equality. It's how it's been interpreted over the years where that equality has been lost.
That's really great to hear, because one of the things I always find interesting about religion and people who follow or profess to have a kind of religion is that gender equality is something that they practice in their everyday lives, except for when religion comes into play and suddenly we have to put gender equality aside. So it's really great to hear about Progressive Judaism bringing religion into line with the values that we hold in our otherwise everyday lives.
Well, that's often how I share it with people, as I say, you know, your religious values and the values that you engage with in society really should be one and the same. So if you believe that women can become lawyers and doctors and hold office within in secular society, how much more so in religious society?
Do you have many female rabbis?
Well, there aren't that many here in Australia, but certainly in the United States, in the United Kingdom, there are many, many women rabbis. The first woman rabbi was Sally Priesand, who was ordained in 1974, I believe. So women rabbis have been around for a long, long time. And I would say within the progressive rabbinic seminaries, women make up at least 50%.
That's fantastic.
Of the students, I should finish that sentence.
Do you think that even though Progressive Judaism claims to at least give gender equality, that there are still barriers for a female rabbi?
Well, I think there are barriers pretty much in any workplace environment or any profession. There certainly are still, I do feel it at times within Progressive Judaism. I certainly don't feel it at Temple Beth Israel. I don't feel it amongst my colleagues. But every now and again, when I encounter somebody who's not from Progressive Judaism or doesn't have an understanding of Progressive Judaism, they question whether it's a right or what my position is as a rabbi.
So why don't we ask a little more? We've been talking about Progressive Judaism for quite a lot. How is Progressive Judaism different from Orthodox Judaism or from whatever it is?
Well, I think there are many points of separation, Tal. I think one of the separation points where we differ from Orthodox Judaism is how we understand Torah, how we understand the law. For us, Torah is Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, the first five books of the Bible, or of the Torah as we call it. And we understand the Torah as being divine inspired. Orthodox Judaism, for example, believes that Moses climbed Mount Sinai and God literally handed the Torah to Moses. So I think it's how we interpret Torah and see it. We see the other books of the Bible, not the books of the Bible, but Talmud, which is one of our sacred texts, as more of a guide as opposed to a mandate on how you're supposed to live your life.
So then how was the Torah constructed then according to Progressive Judaism?
we believe it was divinely inspired, so inspired by God, but ultimately written by human beings over time.
Is there some sort of specific idea that this happened at a particular time, or is it saying that around this time it's happened, or did Moses go up on Sinai and write it himself, but as inspired by God? I think
as many people as there are in the world, there are probably interpretations about that. I think another difference between progressive Judaism and Orthodox Judaism is the idea of the Messiah, or in Hebrew, the Moshiach. So for us as Jews, whether you're Orthodox or progressive, the Messiah has not yet come. Orthodox Judaism believes that the Messiah will essentially come in the form of a human being that will unite Israel, and everybody will return to the land of Israel. Unite Israel, the people, and return to the land of Israel. For progressive Judaism, we believe that potentially the Messiah, and this is oversimplified perhaps, that the Messiah will essentially come in a sense of world peace, where people are united through a sense of commonality of believing in peace more than anything else.
So is this sort of, I've heard the phrase messianic age sometimes thrown about instead of Messiah, and is that
exactly on point?
Interesting. And so I've also heard the phrase, we'll go over a few phrases that I've heard. The other one is I've heard is a spirit of the law as opposed to letter of the law. So is that, I understand that in relation to progressive Judaism as well?
Absolutely. In the interpretation of Jewish law, we kind of look at what's really behind Jewish law. So if it says, to use an everyday example, if it says to us, you know, thou shalt keep the Sabbath, that's one of the Ten Commandments, and it says you shall keep the Sabbath and keep it as holy, you know, 6 days you'll work and on the seventh day you will rest. So we look at that law in the sense of what does it mean to rest? You know, to, in a sense, look at our lives, how we've been busy. We go to synagogue on a Friday and Saturday, spend time with family, and do something that takes us away from our work, from our profession, or anything that might allow us to engage in rest. For some people in Judaism, and for people who are perhaps Orthodox, that means that they should refrain from all work. And their interpretation of work goes beyond just the day job, for example. So it could be, you know, there are certain other rules, 39 rules that are associated, or levels of work, which are connected in modern times. You know, you don't use electricity, you don't drive a car, because all of these could potentially lead to work or are considered work. And those are simple examples.
So your next song for us is actually from the choir at Temple Beth Israel. So,
from what we call junior chazanim. It's a junior choir that we have. Chazanim means singers, and it's a beautiful song, and it's a rendition, a Hebrew version of Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah, Psalm 150. In the song, you know, we talk about, it's Psalm 150 is the last psalm in the book of Psalms, and it talks about all the different instruments that were brought to be played in the temple in Jerusalem. And I think for me, it represents we are all different instruments, and we bring different things to our lives and to our work and to our families, etc.
You're listening to The Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 every Thursday from 8 till 9. Now, we have someone who's written into us here. They're asking, this is Anna Sophie. She's asking, you know, great, hi, nice topic. And she wants to know, Kim, how you or maybe people respond when Orthodox Jews sort of might claim that, you know, progressive Jews might not be real Jews or good Jews or something like that. It's certainly something that I get asked.
Well, that's the kind of question that I really love, because it really speaks to a sense of identity and who we are. Progressive Jews are just as authentic and just as legitimate as any Orthodox Jew. And I believe a real Orthodox Jew wouldn't turn to another Jew and say, hey, you're not real, you're not authentic. Because even within Orthodox Judaism, not every Orthodox Jew, there are many streams of Orthodox Judaism. And not all of them agree with each other. And, you know, I would hope that they wouldn't turn to each other and say, you're not real. You're not good at being, you're not a good Jew, if you will. So really, when I hear a question like that, I think to myself, well, who are they to judge who I am and who my identity, what my identity is?
Especially when it seems, I mean, there's more types of Jews than just Orthodox and progressive. There's also conservative and ones like Reconstructionist. I actually don't quite know what they are.
And there's humanist and there's Hasidic and there's Chabad and there's modern Orthodox. And really, when you start looking at all the different streams of Judaism, one stream shouldn't turn to the other and say, you're less authentic than me. You're not as legitimate as me.
So on the topic of illegitimacy... And flowing on from what we maybe were talking about before when it came to the Bible, but does the Bible reject people that are same-sex attracted?
The Bible is complicated. The Bible is absolutely complicated. But it's really how we interpret the Bible that counts. While there are prohibitions in the book of Leviticus against homosexuality, ultimately what we as progressive Jews, we look at the beginning of the Bible, we look at the beginning of Genesis, where it says quite specifically that each and every one of us are made B'Tselem Elohim, in the image of God. So if we're all made in the image of God, whether we're gay or straight or bi or black or, you know, what you name it, then we're saying that that person isn't legitimate, isn't made in the image of God, and I find that quite unconscionable, because we are all equal.
Would, following on from that, would a progressive synagogue such as TBI perform a civil ceremony or marriage for same-sex attracted couples?
What we would do is we would do a commitment ceremony, because marriage is not legal in Australia. Mm-hmm. And certainly we at Temple Beth Israel, myself and my colleagues, Rabbi Gersh Lazarus and Cantor Michelle Lalum, would have no problem and would welcome two people who are willing to commit to each other with a commitment ceremony, two Jewish people.
Has that happened?
That has happened. I know that I have performed a commitment ceremony as well as my colleagues.
Fascinating. Maybe we could quickly touch on that, but what would actually go on? Does it become the same as what would otherwise be in a Jewish marriage, or...?
It's the same yet quite different, because certainly some of, you're not going to say, you know, husband and wife, for example. Yeah. I usually just talk with a couple about the language that we'd like to use. As I mentioned, this is a commitment ceremony. It's not a marriage. I certainly don't have any issue, and we are pro-marriage equality at Temple Beth Israel, and Progressive Judaism is pro-marriage equality. But certainly some of the liturgy and some of the language within the ceremony, we would change to be appropriate, because to talk about a husband and wife in the biblical sense isn't fitting for a same-sex couple.
Some people would say, but I mean, the Bible, they would say, is quite clear. It says that it, you know, that man shall not lie with another. I can't.
It also says,
don't quote me.
Tal, it also says that a rebellious son should be stoned to death. I haven't seen many rebellious sons being stoned right. lately.
And we don't see people arguing. I just imagine, you know, law reform and people saying, no, we are not putting people in juvenile detention. We're not doing this, not doing that. The answer is stoning to death, because that's what God wants. It's very true. We don't see that. There seems to be an exceptional area where suddenly people get into the letter of the law.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was pretty much going to say, is that it's so funny the things that we've decided are archaic, but some things have to be followed absolutely, if they are explicitly mentioned or not. The things we choose to leave behind as being something reflective of a past social norm, and the other things that we decide we still have to hold on to for whatever reason. And I've never really quite understood that.
Well, it's particularly strange seeing there's so many things that are not written again, there's implicit things that suddenly people also then commit to as if they are gospel, for lack of a better word. But on one hand, we're committing to some things that are not actually in the Torah. They might be nice or they might not be. And then on the other hand, there's certain things that we're turning a blind eye from, or we're absolutely committing to 100%. And so the individual arguments throughout those laws often don't seem very very consistent.
And also some of those laws are often taken out of context. I mean, there are some laws that you really, there's no room for interpretation. They really are quite specific, like the law from Leviticus about homosexuality. But as I mentioned before, you know, looking at something where it says that we're all made in God's image, we're all essentially equal, we need to respect that, and that takes primacy for us as progressive Jews.
So our next song that you've brought us, I think possibly would have the Spirit Lounge Award. I would give it the Spirit Lounge Award for the hardest thing to pronounce, even though this is from a language I'm going to give it. It's Yivarecha by Rick Recht. Is that correct?
It absolutely is. Rick Recht is a Jewish artist from the United States. I've met him personally. He's a lovely guy. He writes a lot of Jewish music for Jewish camps and for from little kids to teenagers to young adults. And this one is May You Be Blessed. It's based on the priestly benediction, or in Hebrew, the Birkat HaKohanim. And for me, this song talks about the importance to stay true to who you are.
And so we're now going to play Yivarecha by Rick Recht.
Ya la 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 la, ya la 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 la, ya la 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 la, ya la 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 la, ya la 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 la, ya la 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 la, ya la 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 la.
You're listening to The Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. We're talking to Rabbi Kim Ettlinger from Temple Beth Israel. Now, Kim, TBI, as I understand, is about to host its second ever Pride Shabbat service. Can you tell our listeners what exactly a Pride Shabbat service is?
Well, this service is part of the Midsummer Festival. And we are delighted to be able to hold the second Shabbat where the theme is really to honor members of the GLBTQI community. And it will be a fairly regular Erev Shabbat service, evening service. Yet we will have potentially readings and a sermon that I'll give that will be welcoming and honor the gay community.
So what makes, is the service in itself any different apart from being like, this is a Pride service?
Well, certainly we'll go through our regular Friday night liturgy with song and music and some guitar led and, you know, some more of the traditional melodies. But any opportunity that we have that is appropriate, we will refer to the Midsummer Festival, we refer to our relationship with the gay community, and really just do whatever we can to let people know that if you are gay and you're Jewish, you certainly, or if you're in a relationship with somebody who's Jewish, you have a home and you're welcome at Temple Beth Israel.
I think it's such a wonderful initiative, and it's really great to see TBI taking the lead and opening up its doors to the GLBTIQ community. So 1 year on from last year's Midsummer Pride Shabbat service, what has been the response from the community, Kim?
It's been overwhelmingly beautiful. I know a story of a person who spoke to me and said that they hadn't stepped inside a synagogue since their bar mitzvah, which was their coming of age service. And coming into TBI for the first time since then, they suddenly felt as if they had a place where they belonged, a home. And they'd said it with, you know, this person said it with tears in his eyes, and he just said, I think I've come home. Finally, I have a spiritual Jewish home where I am welcome. And to me, that says it all.
Why do we need a specific service that acknowledges GLBTIQ? Like, what is the deal? Because I know there were some comments at some point saying, but we are friendly towards GLBTI people. Why do we need a specific service?
Well, ultimately, Tal, I wish we were living in a time where we didn't need a special service at all. That, you know, members of the GLBTQI community would be able to come into any synagogue without any of the prejudice that they have felt before. And I think until we get to that point, hopefully it won't be too long, I think it's important to stand up, to take a stand and to say, we are a synagogue that believes in equality, not just between the sexes, but also gender equality, sexual equality, and the like.
That's really fantastic. It's great to see the values of TBI actually manifesting in so many different ways. Has the something like the Pride Shabbat service been something that's replicated across Australia or in other progressive Jewish communities around the world?
Certainly around the world. One of the things that that is, I would say, unique probably to the United Kingdom and to the United States is there are actually specific gay communities, gay congregations.
Oh, wow.
That were established because essentially people didn't feel welcome in a mainstream, or I shouldn't call it mainstream, I apologize for that term, but within a synagogue. And so, you know, but also what it affords the opportunity is for a gay congregation, for example, is able to directly and consciously address major issues facing the gay community. We at TBI want to be able feel that we were able to do that as well to the best of our ability and to, as I had mentioned before, to be open and welcoming. There aren't other, I don't know what other congregations in Australia, progressive congregations in Australia, if they are celebrating the gay community through service, through services. I just don't know. I'm sorry.
Do you ever become worried that this will lead to shunning from other communities that might feel differently or something like that?
I think there are many issues where we feel differently from within the Jewish community. And to be honest as well, I'm not looking over my shoulder at what other people are saying. We know that we're doing the right thing, that we are engaging and embracing the gay community. This is just an important value for us at TBI.
I think that's great, because I think probably there's a lot of religious places which sort of implicitly agree, but then sort of say, but we don't want to say too much because we don't want to, you know, isolate the people who have many, many different churches or synagogues or other places to go to.
And absolutely, and hopefully this is an area where the Orthodox or other communities can learn from TBI, because at the end of the day, homosexuality is not solely something relevant to progressive Jews. It's something that happens. It's a very natural and normal occurrence in, you know, for Orthodox Jewish people as well, and they're just not necessarily able or have a community that's willing to openly, even if they do privately, accept them. So hopefully it's a way where TBI can just lead the way into the future.
But it does remind me, so I actually do work with Keshet, and we've had people from Keshet on before, and we've had people from TBI before, and the aim is, of course, to sort of do some advocacy work when it comes to the GLBTI community and Judaism. And, of course, the thing we sort of note is that what really often happens is, even if they're from a progressive background, they sort of say, well, I'm gay, so I can't be Jewish, and that really frustrates me, because I'm suddenly like, what are you talking? I feel like, what are you talking about? How can you not know that there, of course, that home is still there for you?
Yeah, absolutely. And we're in a dire state if we're saying that, you know, I'm gay and therefore that's it for me in my community and that's it for me in my religion. Like, that just absolutely should not be the way.
So when is this service? Can you give us the details about this
Absolutely.
Great service?
Absolutely. Pride Shabbat will be on Friday night at 6:15. Not this Friday, Friday the 29th of January. So all are welcome to come and join us at Temple Beth Israel in St Kilda at 6:15 on the 29th of January. I hope I got the date right. It's that Friday night.
Yeah, the Friday night there at that end of January. And 6:15,
the service will last about an hour, and then we have
short.
Yeah, it's not too long.
That's good.
People's attention spans won't drift in one hour.
It's great.
And then it's followed by, a kiddush or refreshments. We'll do the blessing for the wine and the bread. And, you've got to end with a nosh, with some food.
Absolutely. It wouldn't be a Jewish event otherwise. And that's great. I'm actually going to be there as well. I believe Nivi is going to still catch us as well. Is that right? Or are you going to be away?
I'm pretty much going to be back from Cambodia and there at the synagogue.
So we won't give that one away too much. But Nivi will be going to Cambodia and we're going to be hearing some interesting interfaith work from that one. But, I just wanted to say I'm going to be there. I hope that if any of our faithful listeners are there, please tap me on the shoulder. You might not recognize what I look like, but here's how you can recognize what I look like. Go to Facebook. Type in The Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. Join that group. I will accept you. And then all our announcements, when they come up, you get to see them and see them later on. Please join our group because I know there's many more listeners out there than there are in the Facebook group.
So, Tal, I just want to add that one does not have to be Jewish to come along to our service, that you are most welcome to come to any of our services.
That's great. That was another moment there where I thought that was implicit. But again, you need to actually say those things so that people understand and that people are welcome.
And certainly there's more information on our website, which is tbi.org.au.
You're listening to The Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9, and we're coming to the end of another wonderful, wonderful show. I would like to thank Kim and, of course, my co-host Nivi in a moment. But first, we'd just like to say we had quite a few people that wrote in, had wonderful things, follow-up questions, different things like that. And unfortunately, we couldn't reach them, except Kim has sort of graciously offered to say if you want to contact TBI, if you want to contact Kim herself, you can, of course, always continue that conversation.
Absolutely. You can contact me through Temple Beth Israel. And as I'd mentioned, the details are on the website.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Kim. It was a great show. Really enjoyed you opening up and, appreciate you allowing us to sort of maybe ask some questions that could seem a bit difficult for some people. So
it's absolutely my pleasure. Thank you to both of you.
You're listening to The Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
See you next week.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.